spine.
And sprocket.
We shall seize the bridges. It's all a question of bridges. With thunderclap surprise.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like... victory.
Leaving with us, Giant Cross, Captain. Just a matter of time. Where's the rest of your platoon? I said, where's the rest of your platoon, Sergeant Steiner?
You are Captain Stransky. You are the rest of my platoon.
And that's a clip from the topic of tonight's discussion.
Cross of Iron.
Cross of Iron, a 1977 film directed by the great Sam Peckinpah. And the reason why I call him the great Sam Peckinpah is because everybody considers him great, I guess.
You and what army?
I don't know. Some people, I don't know. He's.
I have never heard that.
He's treated with some reverence in the movie.
Oh, yeah, he definitely
film,
is.
Isn't he?
I thought, my impression was he was treated as a... kind of a hack or something?
A drunken hack? I don't know about that.
A glorified
violence
hack.
I think so, but I may be wrong.
It's kind of the Quentin Tarantino of the 1970s.
Yeah, I was kind of young then, I guess.
Yeah. Now, I've never seen any of his films. I've never seen any of his other films. I don't know.
The Wild Bunch.
Wild Bunch I've never seen.
Oh, really? Okay.
Do I need to see that?
I think I have.
Yeah. It's good.
Straw Dogs I have seen. With Dustin Hoffman. I didn't see it with Dustin Hoffman.
That's a Peckinpah film?
Yeah. And others. I would name them all, but I don't know any of them.
Well, we can look it up later.
But it doesn't really matter, you know, and that's one thing about this show is you don't need to be a film buff in order to listen to this show and appreciate this show. You just need to like movies.
That's right. So never pretend to be experts in anything.
No. And I came into this film knowing really nothing about Sam Peckinpah and nothing about this movie. This was my first viewing of this film.
Yes, me too.
And this is Dave and Jeff, and we have with us again.
Rich Spilkey's here, and I have seen the movie a couple of times.
In your ute?
In my ute.
Were you wearing a ute or driving a ute?
Playing one, maybe.
I did try to watch it again to refresh my memory.
That's a loot. Yeah.
And it was not available on Netflix unless I wanted to pay a number of dollars that I chose not to pay. And my wife is good at checking out movies at the library, and she ordered it for me. And, of course, the email came just this afternoon that it was available at the library, but not enough time for me to get from downtown to Chicago to get it and get here at the same time.
Well, I'm sure you can still, as long as you speak with authority, feel free to chime in, even if you don't know what's going on.
There's a lot of people out there that do that frequently. Yeah, they may not know what they're talking about, but they act as if they do.
And the fourth at the table is?
Mike Lemke.
And Mike, you've seen this film?
Once, a few months ago, and I checked it out of the library.
Okay.
Yep.
So for a film that was done in 1977, I'm surprised we haven't seen more of it. Is this one that has not been on reruns?
No, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, what's that reason, Dave? What's your...
I didn't think it was all that good.
I mean, this is sort of considered as a classic must-see World War II film.
Well, initially, my understanding from Wikipedia is that it initially was kind of met with that kind of a response and then slowly became a kind of a cult must-see war film.
I wonder what cult...
I don't want to name anyone to offend any particular cult. But anyway, it opens with what?
You wouldn't name the Scientologists. No, so it's probably not a Scientology film.
Okay. So how does the film open up, Jeff? Help me out here.
All right. Cross of Iron is a film that takes place in Eastern Europe somewhere during World War II. And there are mostly concerns.
Tolman Peninsula.
Oh, good, Mike. Thank you.
Black Sea.
Oh, very good.
Wow. Yeah, we have our historian here for a reason, okay. Folks.
Do you have the coordinates?
Germans are retreating to Crimea.
Yeah, that's great. And the Russians are in hot pursuit. And most of the film concerns a platoon of German soldiers and their battle. And their struggle. Their Kampf, if you will.
Oh, Mein Kampf.
I'm whipping out my German. Yeah, they got this Kampf. The movie stars James Coburn as the lead character, Sergeant
Steiner.
Steiner, yes. And then James Mason as Colonel Brandt. The mm-hmm. fabulous David Warner as Captain Keisel. And Maximilian Schell as Stransky.
Yeah, what was the opening scene? We had, they were out on a reconnaissance patrol.
Well, even before that, you know, the...
I thought
the credits were really interesting because the credits were was sort of this child's song being played.
Yes, which is Little Hans.
Oh, is that what it was called?
Yeah, it translates. Yeah, my German's pretty good too. Little Hans. And it tells the story of, originally the song told the story of a German boy going off and coming back a man, which fit pretty well. Oh. And later on, it kind of became a song, often is sung in Germany, about little Hans going off and his mama cries and then he just comes home. So a little less about a coming-of-age story in the big bad world. So it made sense. And I watched those opening credits too. And you may know, well, Jeff knows, I make a lot of music videos for my school based on historical songs. I've done... I Never Loved Eva Braun by the Boomtown Rats, and do slideshows with imagery. I did a World War I one by the Dropkick Murphys, which was kind of a World War I song, and put imagery in there, and I play them at school with the topic to show kids modern artists, you know, refer to history a lot and their stuff. It's still alive. It's around us. And so, yeah, I did a slideshow kind of presentation of Hitler with little kids, right? The patting on the head scene. He pats the little SS kid on the head in the end of the war with little children earlier, right?
And, right.
And then it clips it, intersperses it with a military song. Dun, yes. Dun, 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 dun. Little Hans. Mm-hmm. Boom, 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 boom.
Right. And so then, there was this juxtaposition of this kid's song and then this military march and these scenes of kids and Hitler Youth and... like scenes from Triumph of the Will or some of those German propaganda films where everybody's looking up to Hitler and the beautiful vision he has for the Aryan people. And also cut in where there's some battle scenes with that.
And it accelerated. Now, what I had done with Eva Braun's song was I had built into scenes with Eva and then, you know, Adolf and... and then I accelerated it at the end of the song where the pacing picks up and started more quickly flashing the pictures faster and faster as the song picked up and made the imagery grow in graphicness and violence as it went. And then the last shot in the song, it's I Never Loved Eva Braun, and it opens with a girl saying, gee, are you really going out with Adolf? And then it which I just love. Maybe it's just me.
I don't know the song.
But you gotta love the phrase. Gee, aren't you really going out? Are you really going out with Adolf?
Yeah.
You can just imagine like high school girl stuff, right? And then it ends with a gee, and then I run a shot of German helmets on crosses. Mm. And I have at one point marching, violence accelerating, so crosses with the thing, and I think I'm so brilliant, right? Oh, and I show the kids, look, they're marching to where, you know? Oh my God, to their desk, Mr. Kleinschmidt, this is a brilliant work of art. And I'm watching the opening, and I'm going, this is what I did, and I've never seen this before. This is what I did. Hmm. So in that regard, Peckinpah is a genius when he does what I do.
When he does, yes. you would agree.
But I did think, so it did accelerate, Jeff, and it did kind of neatly. Then I saw a picture of James Coburn.
Mm-hmm.
In there in black and white, and then it started flipping to color, and then it made the transition into the opening scene of the film.
Yeah.
So, and that was good, but of course, the quality of the special effects. You know, I'm watching that opening going, man, if they had Keynote or, you know, whatever program today, iMovie, to make that, it would be even better because, you know, that was my take on it.
Well, this movie was made in 1977. My guess is that. war movies up until this point were not very, were usually not showing this particular side of the war.
No, not the Eastern Front. And they were not, never. And yeah. Not the Germans being the good guys.
Right. Germans being the good guys, Russians being the bad guys, and no Americans to be found at all.
Right. They're they were not the Audie Murphy type.
Yeah, movies. Definitely
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
So we get that sense right from the beginning, right from the credits, that this is going to be a different kind of a film because mm-hmm. you've got that weird juxtaposition of the kid song and the marching and the
yes.
and the happy things that are going on, and then this terrible, gritty, hand-to-hand combat sequence opens the actual action of the film, and you think, wow, this is going to be different.
As the Germans are on a reconnaissance patrol, yes, and as right. different as it is, when you go back to films like All Quiet on the Western Front, which I think I referenced last show, that was very much an anti-war film, and as I mentioned on our gaming podcast, I like to take that at school and juxtaposition scenes from Sergeant York, World War One, with All Quiet, World War One,
mm.
and the kids realize, wow, same war, pretty different view on that war,
yeah.
and we can talk about viewpoint. And so if you go back, and in fact it says on the back of this film kit case, no less a film authority than Orson Welles called it the greatest anti-war movie since All Quiet on the Western Front.
Ah. Hmm.
So I suppose the war films, as we probably know, went through a more, got to show the war better because it's World War II, right? And when I grew up on those films, we're glorifying the war.
Glorifying, yeah, mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, this definitely did not glorify the war.
No,
no. But I don't know if it was anti-war. I don't know. I mean,
you know, I had that same thought.
I didn't really know that it was
yeah. anti-war.
James You're Coburn right. was, it was more like, I'm going to do my job. This is what I do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it. And I don't care about Hitler. I don't care about the ideology. I don't care about any of that. I care about my men and doing my job.
And it, and yes, exactly. And so I didn't look at it as an anti-war film, more as just a, that war is personal. It isn't something big that you yeah. look at in a large perspective and as a viewer when you're an active participant in it, it's something that's very personal.
Okay, so I'm sorry, you saw it, you did not see it
as, I did not see it as an anti-war film. Jeffrey Hallett.
And Mike, you saw it as a not an anti-war?
Not anti-war.
And your name is?
Mike Lemke.
And this person saw it as an anti-war film, and his name was Orson Welles.
Right.
Sorry, boys.
It was an anti-war film? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, and here's what I saw it as an
But, you know, he didn't do anything good after Magnificent Ambersons.
Well, true. But
he peaked in 1950.
True.
Now, wait a minute, Dave. I saw it as anti-war, and you didn't ask my name.
Rich, sorry, it's because you hadn't spoken yet about it.
No, I thought it was anti-war.
Did you really?
Well, because it's just. I mean, it's subtle anti-war, maybe as far as, you know, just realizing, oh, this is just, you know, well, this is just awful. You got people like this, and you got to deal with these situations, and it's certainly, like you said, they made it personal, but the personal was bad.
And here's Peckinpah's problem. Here's my problem with this film. It wanted to have an anti-war message, but Peckinpah could not let go of his childlike fascination with the getting shot and falling over dead that I played when I was a kid. I played it well. I played it by the book.
There was plenty of that in the film.
Right?
In beautiful, full color, slow motion, high resolution,
and that part,
glory.
So then he kind of played up the heroics of the couple characters while still trying to have an anti-war message. So he didn't quite succeed in that. I think the theme of the thing was a little confused.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fair enough. So as the story opens, we first see Sergeant Steiner with his squad out on some sort of reconnaissance mission and encountering some Russians and having some very gritty battle. But what happens...
not quite as gritty as I thought it was going to be for Peckinpah at that point. When I didn't even know this was Peckinpah until I'm like starting it. I'm like, what? Oh, this is going to have guys in slow motion with blood coming out of them. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't in that opening. It was kind of subdued, but go ahead.
Yeah. But then we're introduced to this captain who comes along, who's new to the outfit. He's just transferred in, who's played by Maximilian Schell, Captain Stransky. And he comes into the outfit and introduces himself to James Mason and says he's kind of come up to the front. To
From France, the boring place.
With the idea of earning an Iron Cross.
Yes, mm-hmm. to the fun place, the battle place.
And he's got some sort of history as a Prussian aristocrat or something?
Yes.
Aristocratic family.
Yeah, one of the themes I try to think in terms of the, you know, man versus nature, man versus man. And one of the conflicts seemed to be class.
Class conflict, yeah.
Yeah. Stronsky, like you said in the Schreiner. Last show, like the Russian versus the Soviet.
Mm.
This would be what, the Prussian aristocrat versus the German working class man kind of idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But right off the bat, though, is that believable? I mean, at that stage of the war, were there really people, I'm sure somewhere there would have been a guy like that, but really most of the people were much more realistic about what was going on. And
yeah. This is late. There'd been a lot of
43, right? Or
Yeah, I think 43. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if he had spent the whole war in France and his father was a decorated officer and his grandfather was a decorated officer and his great-grand, you know, maybe he did feel that way, you know. He might have been one of those guys that was left that was seeking glory in the Third Reich.
Okay, so you can give the character the benefit of the doubt that that was plausible.
I guess so, yeah, yeah.
I didn't buy it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I bought it.
Okay, and your name is?
Orson Welles.
It just didn't quite strike me. Something just struck me as fake. And I don't know if it was the dialogue.
Well, it might have been a little naive for him to come and think, hey, I can just earn an Iron Cross. I can go up to the front and do whatever I've got to do and get an Iron Cross and go home. But,
yeah, okay.
It didn't keep me from believing it.
Okay.
And so he obviously plays the perfect foil, if that's the right word, for Steiner, who is a real soldier.
Realistic, yes. And then the other conflict, you have the idealized view of war or the naive view versus the realistic nitty-gritty view of war.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what does anything happen then?
Oh. Yes, a ton of stuff happens.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So Steiner's in the bunker area.
They capture a Russian boy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Steiner, the new guy, shows up, says, hey, shoot this boy.
You need to shoot that boy.
And of course. Now, that was a good line here when Steiner says,
I'm not going to shoot that boy.
Yeah. You do it.
Oh, you do it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that seemed okay to me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the fakey guy, the Prussian, didn't want to do it. Or you could tell he was, all right, I will. But you kind of thought, well, this will shock him.
Yeah. So we see the humanity of James Coburn, a practical human kind of a character.
Trying to maintain his humanity.
Trying to maintain his humanity, right. And then as we see more of this Captain Stransky, we see that one of his subordinates is having a bit of a tryst.
Now,
or has an affection for... Right. There's this homosexual thing going on.
Yeah, there really is, yeah.
All right. So I started, as I'm watching this movie,
yeah.
I had to start a column in my notes entitled, and my notes have been lost, my computer crashed, everybody, so I had to start a column, I called it, What's Up With That?
Yeah.
Okay? And no, I'm serious. And so the Prussian guy, what's his character's name?
The Prussian?
Stransky
is looking in a mirror, like, In the mirror, in the background, behind him, he sees this German soldier stroke the cheek of another soldier and then wipe his fingers across his lips. Now, I don't know. I didn't know where this was going. So I'm like, what's up with that? Yeah, what is that? Where did that come from?
Yeah.
This is turning into like a surrealism film. You know, this is a Dali film. And then he like catches him and he says, oh, hey, don't you guys like war? War is good. It's for men. Don't you like being with men? I like being with men.
I'd rather be with men than anybody else. Wouldn't you? He tries to get them to sort of admit that they would... And he does get them to confess that they would rather be with men.
But that was totally ridiculous. And remember he starts yelling... You just saw this recently, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
You know, he starts going... Rich, you remember?
He's like, yeah, I remember.
Make him say it. Say it. Make him say it. Make him say it. Like 40 times he said that stupid line.
That's
and
just
I'm like,
a really uncomfortable scene that just makes
this?
Me like...
Scrap. I just... But But it just, it did not, it wasn't believable. It doesn't fit. It didn't fit. And I'm like, what the heck? There's many other ways to have shown this. Many other, you could find a letter, a love, I don't know. No. It just, and it opened up the, what's up with this column? Well, I left the scene still thinking that Stransky was also gay.
I thought it was going to be the three too. Of them together. Yeah, I thought they were going to do a little happy time in the foxhole.
I don't know. But you didn't think that worked, did you? The writing, the dialogue?
It didn't stick with me too badly. Certainly not to the extent that it did for you. Saw later on why they had the scene, because Stransky actually used
blackmail.
The leverage as blackmail.
Yes, because he leaves the scene. He goes, and if you ever act upon it, I will hang you both.
Yeah.
Like, now what's up with that?
Yeah.
Because I still didn't know he was going to want to blackmail him.
But I will say that there were a couple of times in the film when I thought, when I felt like the director was pushing the edge of what was acceptable at the time.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to do it.
At the expense of creating a believable story.
At the expense of.
And I find that a little annoying.
Okay.
When they say, and nobody's ever really talked about homosexuality in a movie before, especially not in a war movie. And I can do it a little bit. And it doesn't really fit in the story, but that doesn't matter because I can do it a little bit.
Yeah.
I find that like gratuitous.
And maybe we're just more sophisticated these days with the whole issue.
Well, I certainly am.
Certainly, yeah. So you're right.
At the time, though, it may have been...
Oh, edgy, 77.
Yeah, edgy, yeah.
Very edgy.
Like, the critics probably loved it.
Yes, yeah. Gives it that R rating, makes it a little taboo.
Right.
Which brings in people.
Yeah, but, and really at this point, too, with the R rating, I told Laura she couldn't watch it. Halfway through this movie, before the slow motion blood that I was expecting way earlier, I almost went up and said, hey, honey, you can come watch this film with me. You know, it's R back in that day is different than R today, which is still true. But, there wasn't a whole lot so far. So,
but then you had the women platoon, but that's later.
Oh, later.
Okay,
later.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, so then there's a scene at which we see Stransky's real stripes, where there's a lot of artillery coming in, and Stransky, rather than being out and battling alongside of his men, is in his bunker, in fact, under a table. Talking on the phone, which I thought was kind of a comical scene.
Yeah.
He's hiding. He's not used to this.
So comical as in?
Funny.
but the film, it doesn't say comedy on this.
But I thought that particular scene was funny. You know, the guy is supposed to be out to get his Iron Cross, and he's cowering underneath this table.
And the next part after that, he's in the trench, still on the phone.
Remember? Yeah.
And he's yelling... No, stop retreating. Everyone, run to the front. Go. Counterattack. Okay. Can we be a little more subtle than that? That he's faking a counterattack activity? That he's out in the middle of everyone yelling this while people are running away from around behind him? Like, you're going to pull that off? I mean, again, I just couldn't buy into that.
It was too much.
The writing was just not good for that. The dialogue. I'll blame the writer, not Peckinpah, who's directed the thing.
All right. Well, didn't he write it as well, Peckinpah?
That might explain it.
But it wasn't all about Stransky.
No.
Not every scene was Stransky.
No.
So.
No, there was plenty of scenes with James Coburn.
Mm-hmm. And his platoon.
And his platoon going out.
The Russians charging the bunker and, all of that.
If you want action scenes for... historians who just love battle, like war movies, or gamers like us, or whatever, you got a whole ton of them.
There's
that's
a
for
lot
sure.
of battle lot. Scenes.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
Tanks, anti-tank weapons, machine
tanks
guns.
Tanks and factories.
Yes.
Factories. which was another what's with that minute moment for me. Because in the one scene, they're battling in a trench line. They're in trenches, Rich. They're in trenches, right? And then
they're entrenched.
They're starting to move back a little from the trench. It wasn't very far, was it, Mike? And suddenly, they're crawling into a factory sewer Stalingrad type area, which I'm thinking, how'd they get into this underground factory? Why is their trenches built? Why? What is going on here? I'm like,
well, I know why.
Peckinpah is mixing his different film imagery when it doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, what's up with that? There's this, like the fifth entry on that column.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, where did this come from?
Well, I know why they did it. It's because, like any good director of a World War II movie, he wanted a scene where a tank goes through a brick wall. And you can't do it unless there's a factory. And so he put the factory there, and he ran a tank through that brick wall.
It was a trench battle.
Yeah, I know.
And so you thought so, too. Did you think that? Where did this come from?
Yeah.
The Stalingrad building.
I was watching Enemy at the Gates. Well, you mean kind of like physically, where did that building come from? Yeah.
The tank comes through the wall.
Yeah.
And when they exit it, what do they come out of?
Like a sewer.
Okay, I thought it was a trench line again. I'm like, what? Now they're back in the trenches.
No, they went through a sewer.
But it was cool scene. I mean, yeah, you guys getting shot off the big pipes and tank coming through the wall.
It did feel a little bit the way the movie moved, like it was going on too long, like it was very episodic. So, the first scenes were in the bunker, in the trenches, mm-hmm. and then they had this whole scene, a series of scenes in the factory.
In the factory there was bunker complex.
There was the stuff in the hospital. Steiner gets wounded and goes to the hospital. And that whole series of scenes I didn't really care for too much, where he's recuperating in the hospital and he kind of has...
Okay, I was just about to write that scene into my what's up with that file when I figured out, it's a dream sequence.
Yeah.
Oh, really? It's just not a perfectly done dream sequence, but he's dreaming and he's going back and forth in his memories. Yeah, he jumped in the water, the nurse came, he saw different faces, right?
Right. And then there's the party and people dancing, and then he's alone.
I thought he was just like disoriented from being wounded. And
I think he was, but I also think the director was disoriented.
Dream. Well, the director might have been too, yeah.
Actually, no. Look, this explains it. The hospital scenes is where the directorship switched from Sam Peckinpah to Salvador Dali. they both co-directed it. They switched it off.
Wow.
So that explains the surrealism. But it was, again, it's the 60s. It's a 70s feeling to it, to those scenes. And I kind of liked them. Now, you didn't like it?
The different faces,
and they're having the party, and then they're shoving the lettuce in their mouths.
Yeah. Oh, I hated that.
This is getting really weird. I like weird. I like this kind of weird.
Was weird, bad 70s psychedelic.
It did
drug
kinda.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I just thought.
But Jeff, remember, I'm trying to like this film at this point.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I have another thought, that just a small sidebar, and we'll get back to the sequence, but when they do show the multiple attack scenes where it just seems like it just never ends for the Germans, it does remind me of a thought that I've had that, again, this is a small sidebar, but when you're losing the war, when the Germans are losing the war from 43 on, and I think about medals, you know, the Knight's Cross, the Medal of Honor that the Americans have. I think the Victoria Cross is one of the high awards for the British. I guess my point is that the standards to win, and I certainly don't want to belittle anyone who's won a decoration in the war, but when you're winning, like the Americans generally were, you know, you're advancing. You attack where you're strong, and you attack where the enemy is weak. You're not forced into the crucible of stressful situations as frequently as the losing side is, day after day, week after week. And so when the Germans were losing on the Eastern Front or on the Western Front in 44, 45, they were just constantly being squeezed and outnumbered. And, you know, it leads to acts of desperation. And you either succeed with some heroic, fantastic action, or you perish.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I just think, just from a sheer numbers point of view, the number of amazingly heroic acts or death would just numerically, statistically occur more frequently on the side that's losing. You know, only because, you know, when you're winning...
Yeah.
You don't really have to push it to the limit.
Right.
When you know, well, you know, we don't need to attack there because we'll wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
When we have the planes. You know, because you can. Whereas if you're losing, you don't have that privilege of... Anyway, and I don't mean to belittle any award winner of any nation.
Sure, of course.
But
of course
not. I just think that perhaps if you're losing, it's harder to win those awards. I mean, the bar probably gets raised as the years go by because there's so many incredible acts happening. And I wonder if that actually happened. I don't mean to take a sidebar too much on your story.
Yeah, I don't know actually either. Maybe that's not true. Maybe more people are running away in those later years.
But does it make it easier then to win when you're losing? To win the medal when you're losing? Are you saying that or that?
No, I think it's harder to win when you're losing
because there's so many acts of desperation.
I think it's actually easier to win when you're winning because the bar is a little bit lower the threshold to win the equivalent award. And again, that's not the purpose of your podcast.
Sure, no, but that's, that could be. I mean,
I don't want people to be angry with me for even saying that. But
yeah, no, we don't.
But that means. So was Stronsky right in going to the Eastern Front where the war was being lost? Would that to get his medal? that a good move on his part?
I don't think he realized how difficult it might be and what kind of qualifications or what type of incredible ordeal he might have to endure to actually win the award.
Yeah.
But it appeared that he was going to get it, as it turns out in the film. He considered himself qualified to get it fairly easily just by being...
Virtue of being him.
Virtue of being him, by commanding this platoon. And he sets himself up to get the cross, and he gets this
witness.
Captain Trebek.
He needs two witnesses.
Right. He gets Captain Trebek. Or a lieutenant,
blackmailed homosexual, which also had a big mustache. So I'm like, okay, no one else has a big mustache in this film except for the homosexual man. Is this some kind of 70s stereotype? I'm like, what's up with that?
Really? You might be looking a little too deeply into it.
Just
Dave.
Make him look like a normal guy. Why is he the only one with this big bushy mustache? I'm thinking the Village People or something. I'm sorry, it did not work for me very well.
I think the title of this should be "What's Up with That?"
And then that guy's ear. Did you see that guy's ear in the thing?
Yeah, the one guy had. I thought that was like frostbite on his ear.
I was just kept threw it into the "What's Up with That?" column. What's up I'm with like, that? What's with that guy's ears? What's with that guy's mustache?
I thought that added realism. The mustache didn't, but the ears did.
Yeah, I guess it was an injury. I guess I just got all caught up in thinking it was like some kind of, I don't know what, bad makeup job. It looked like they folded the ear over and like stuck some plaster over it.
It could be the actor just had a bad ear.
Well, then I take it back, dear actor. I'm sorry to offend you about your ear.
So Steiner goes to the hospital. He has this convalescence period. Then he goes back.
Mm-hmm. He's told.
Looks like Stransky's going to get the Cross of Iron if Steiner is willing to also put his name on the report that says that Stransky did something
heroic,
and Steiner doesn't want to do it.
Correct. Consistently with his character.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's going to stand up for what's right.
And so the major, who is James Mason, is now suspecting that Stransky is lying.
Yes. Now,
he's not fooled.
Here's something Peckinpah, I noticed, did do. We're not kind of bouncing around, but directorially, did you notice the bomb explosions?
Yes.
He used them two or three times in a special way.
Yes.
And I think it was in the opening scene, the one character who you liked, I think, he was kind of like the hippie dude from the film about... the gold, stealing the gold. That guy in this movie.
James Mason's
David
assistant.
Warner. David Warner. He was not in.
Early on, the bombs are accelerating, and then he stands up and he does his mock Hitler thing.
Right.
Which, again, teed you off that this was a kind of anti-war film, right? Mock Sieg Heil thing, and the bombs crescendo right there.
Yes.
Now, that was really... And then he also did the bomb thing, I noticed, when... Steiner and the general were talking about, well, this man says he was heroic. What do you say? I cannot say.
Yeah.
And the bombs were used as this interspersed with the tension of the dialogue.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty good.
Yes. I actually, the fact that I noticed it made me not like it as much. Because to me it was like Young Frankenstein and Frau Blücher. Who every time they said Frau Blücher, it was and the horses. And throughout this movie, they carried on their dialogue and it would be punctuated by these bomb bursts.
Did you do it more than those two?
I'm a homosexual. I want the Iron Cross. No, you can't have it.
So you noticed it too?
I noticed it throughout the film.
Okay.
I thought it was three times. There was never a point where somebody got covered up by the bomb and had to say, what? I couldn't hear you because of all the bombs.
Yeah,
the bombs fell conveniently around the dialogue.
Well, is it lightning and thunder used for the same reason in non-war movies?
Yes, exactly.
Could have been.
Exactly.
But you're right. To make it realistic, you would have had some people yelling, what? I can't hear you.
Yeah. But so. I did like all the bombs, and I loved the dirt all of the scenes that were inside those bunkers that they were in, those pillboxes or whatever.
Dirt falling through
and the dirt falling. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Sam Peckinpah like invented it the dirt falling.
No, it wasn't dirt.
Sand.
No, it was dust. No one ever dusted down there.
It was very dusty. Women.
Yeah.
But he must have invented that and loved that.
He loved that.
Like through the whole film.
But it was kind of cool.
And the actors are probably like, do you have to keep dropping the dirt on our heads? We're trying to talk.
It's in my eye again. Cut the scene.
It's all over my papers. It's in my beer.
I thought you were going to say you liked the earth blowing up out of the ground in the explosion scenes.
I did like that.
Like on the cover picture here.
Yeah.
Because when we were kids, we took a gas. We would make a lot of war movies, as I told you. Well, I said I played war. I also made some war films and Planet of the Apes movies. But we buried gasoline in a can in the ground, thinking that we just had to kind of stick a wick in there and light this, and it would blow up the earth all up in the air, and this would be great. We'll have guys running by it, and they'll jump in the air and fall sideways, much like Peckinpah did in his film. And the guy... the can of gasoline got it on fire, and the fire was shooting out the spout of the can of gasoline. I thought this was going to blow up. You know,
it should have.
And the guy who happened to be over there getting a drink from the hose is standing there with his hose. He's taking drinks. Sorry, to digress. We can edit this out. And we all look up and go, "Bring the hose! Bring the water!" And he's just standing there, shocked, watching this flame spurt out of this gas can, and this other guy's running around.
Wow, you could have hurt somebody.
We could have. We were okay.
How old were you?
We got it put out. This is probably 6th grade, 7th grade, so 11, 12, mm-hmm. 13, the older guys. Yeah. Good times. And so, the dirt fell, and then he blackmailed the... And he refused to sign, and so then where did it go from there?
Well, then the retreat started in earnest, right?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Steiner was left behind as a rear guard.
Right. And he was supposed to go with them, but Stransky...
Oh, Stransky left him behind as a rear guard. Even though
on purpose.
James Mason said not to.
Right.
Oh, I missed that little part.
Yeah. So Stransky made as if to make the call, and then in the midst of the call to tell them to retreat, he pulled the phone lines out like they'd been cut. So James Coburn and his group are left out there to their own devices, and they have to make their way back, which then turns into this kind of a long series of scenes of them, you know, making their way through the woods,
with
over the river and through their woods.
And the slow motion and the slow motion blood has started by this time in the movie, very in earnest. And what I noticed, too, about him is, go back and watch it. It seemed disjointed a lot.
Definitely.
Yeah, and like even the slow motion. So like he uses it here for this guy getting shot and the blood's coming out. And then he doesn't use it for this guy running, picking up his gun. And then it goes back to Coburn and it's a slow motion shot of like the gun shell flying out of the gun.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Why was that fast now? This is slow and then this is fast and that's slow. And I thought you would just do the slow motion on the blood. Why do I get a gun with the cartridge popping out? It just didn't seem.
But you forgot to say what's up with that.
And what's up with that? Slow motion with the.
So they make as they're making their way back. They cross a bridge, which is a classic scene of a squad coming up on a bridge, and somehow they manage to sneak. They move through the water absolutely silently.
Oh,
they climb the bridge absolutely silently with knife in the teeth.
Which is pretty classic.
Absolutely silently.
Movie move.
Come right up behind the Russian soldiers absolutely silently and slit their throats. Which, and is that possible? I don't know. I've never done it. But
I thought, boy, are they moving silently.
They are really moving silently. And in a movie, you can do that by simply turning the volume down on your sound equipment. And then everybody's moving silently. And then they go into this scene of the house with the Russian women in it who are standing by
The night witches, Marshall
Lass. The sirens.
The sirens, the one in the tub.
And that gives the director a little chance to...
I see it's R-rated now.
Yeah, some gratuitous TNA. Did you like that whole sequence?
Sound effect. Well...
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
No, I mean...
I didn't feel like that was necessary.
No, we know where this goes. So they capture the women, right? The Germans leave how many guards with 8 women?
2.
2. The women start playing up. The one woman looks at the others and goes, like knowingly, hey, let's use our sexual wiles. Is it guiles or wiles?
I wiles.
What's guiles then?
It's different.
Oh. let's use our sexuality to get our way out of this mess, which we all saw coming.
We did.
And then the part with the, remember, this is going to be a family show. So the one gentleman is with the woman and she's on her knees.
See, he wasn't a gentleman, though. He was a Nazi.
He was a Nazi, but they were gentlemen up until then.
No, but he was an actual Steiner. Nazi. Oh, okay. He was not a German. I mean, he wasn't a German soldier like the rest of Steiner's guys.
Oh, he was a different guy?
Yeah, he was the Nazi. He was the party guy.
Oh, now, only Mike would notice this very important bit.
Yeah, that's why he got that horrible... That's why he had that horrible thing happen to him.
Fate, which would
because
be...
Because he was a Nazi.
And the other guys weren't Nazis?
No, they were just German soldiers. Right.
Aren't you just automatically a Nazi when
No, but I mean, he was the party guy.
No, you're
guy.
Not. No,
he was
you're
the party
not.
Guy.
No, you're not, Jeff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you knew that.
Okay, yes, I did.
Okay.
No, did
but he
you?
Was the party guy.
No, I didn't
guy,
know that.
You know.
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, man, we got a lot of history to teach.
I don't know what the numbers are, but there were many German soldiers.
That were not Nazis?
Lots. I don't know what lots means.
Yeah, the whole Wehrmacht versus the SS deal was...
Huh? Okay, our next book is going to be Introduction to World War II.
The Wehrmacht is the army. It was kind of co-opted by Hitler and the
there were
Nazi
lot,
Party.
There were lots of officers, high-ranking officers that were not members of the Nazi
and
Party.
And your plots against Hitler come out of the Wehrmacht, which was the lesser fanatic Nazis. Some of them may have joined just to gain political influence, too, and not have been ardent Nazis.
So whole how come nobody's told me about this?
Because you weren't in my until now. Eighth grade class.
I'm young.
There's still hope. So, as Mike says,
yes.
Should we leave it at the unfortunate biting?
So he probably deserved it, don't you think, Mike?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, obviously.
Okay. And then didn't you see that coming?
Yeah.
And then, at this point, even though I saw this coming, you know what I still had to say?
Yeah.
What's up with that? I mean, what are you doing? Why are we pausing this movie in the drama to have this whole scene, which, and then have this happen to the guy? With the blood and everything, yeah. And he's screaming and he's grabbing himself. And I'm like, come on, what's up with this? I mean, yeah. I am too old for this. I'm too old for this. And maybe it was 1977 and then this would be considered like cutting edge or something. But come on, I know.
Yeah. I didn't dig it.
How do you feel about it, Dave?
So at this point, you know, I thought, oh, I could invite Laura down to see this movie. Remember?
No.
Yeah. Now I'm like, oh, thank God she hasn't come down to see this movie. Because she would be like, you're not even finishing that film. I'm like, oh, man. So I almost just skipped a whole scene. But, okay, I made it through that.
So they finally, Steiner and the remaining group come back to... They get back to their headquarters, and
don't they almost get shot at by their own guys?
Stronsky is there, and he sees them coming in, and he orders
the man with the mustache
to be
the
shot.
The man with the mustache,
yeah.
To shoot Steiner and the guys that are coming back.
Yeah,
and they
because
come back
because they're dressed
they stole
like
the clothing.
They're dressed like Russians.
They
yeah,
stole
right.
the clothing from yeah. the peasant, not peasant from the partisan women.
Yes.
So they had army uniforms of Russians.
Right.
So he brought them in as... And before they even go in, right, one of them says, well, like, I hope they don't mistake us for whatever, you know, and shoot us. And
then they did.
They made them put their hands up, and they're marching in, and Steiner's, like, got the gun at their back, you know. I'm bringing in these prisoners. Don't shoot!
And but they only shot because the guy was...
Ordering
Stronsky's
them. Yeah, traffic.
Guy.
Yeah. Was ordering them.
Because he didn't want them to return.
He didn't want
Stronsky
them to return.
Yeah.
That's right. Because Stronsky wanted his Iron Cross.
Yeah, he was an easy guy to hate.
Yeah.
I kind of like him.
But
you know,
but Stronsky. Somehow amidst all of that shooting, there's quite a bit of shooting in the machine guns. Still,
didn't
some of Steiner's men, a few of them make it through, including Steiner himself.
Yeah.
He's pretty upset by this point, and he takes out his machine gun and shoots Trebek.
The innocent homosexual man.
Yeah.
Well, and, not innocent.
Well, only following orders.
Shoots him really. He shoots him really well too.
Shoots him good.
Yeah.
Probably.
Is that slow motion with blood too?
Slow motion with blood. Yeah, a lot of writhing on the ground and blood kind of squirting out of parts.
Yeah.
That was good.
But he deserved it. He deserved it.
It was good.
Now we get now we come to the end of the end.
Shell is just a product of his parents who put this pressure on him to get this cross of iron.
He didn't even shoot.
It's not his fault.
He didn't even shoot Stronsky.
Okay, so then he gets to Stronsky, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
And
he gets to Stronsky, and
for some reason Steiner doesn't shoot him.
He doesn't shoot him.
And I bet you all were thinking something.
And he gives him, in fact, he gives Stronsky
a gun
and he says, come on,
and
let's go
out. And you all were thinking, what's up with that?
What's up with that?
I mean, what is he doing? I mean, I was incredulous.
He gives him a gun, like, and he said, let's go shoot
Steiner,
some Russians.
Yeah, but Steiner's the kind of guy who's not going to do that. He cold-bloodedly killed the machine gunner, following orders. He's going to get into this other guy's face and finish him off right there. So I'm like, okay, help me out. Because, you know, I'm a shallow person.
Maybe he thinks that
you don't treat
Stronsky,
a Prussian officer that way.
Maybe he thinks Stronsky has seen the error of his ways. And now he's converted and he wants to go out and shoot some Russians.
No. Now, you were being facetious. And what are you thinking, Mike?
Because you're not going to be facetious. I actually kind of like that part. I remember
it was a twist.
It was a twist,
I think that maybe the thought was, I'm sure he thought that he was going to get shot, you know. Mm-hmm. And so basically he's saying, hey, here's your chance, because I'm going to shoot you. And you know I will. And I'm justified in shooting you. Mm-hmm. I mean, these words were never spoken.
No, but
they're unspoken. Right. And so, you know, you want to earn your Iron Cross? Now is the time that you earn the Iron Cross the real way. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to kill you if you don't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, maybe that was not said, but maybe that was, implied. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to die today. So why don't you earn an Iron Cross doing it?
Right.
Yeah.
And Stronsky responded to that. He kind of had the gun at James Coburn's back. He had an opportunity to shoot
smiled
him.
Smiled evilly, yes.
And then turned and they both went out.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then the
and
last
again,
scene
again, I'm thinking,
appears.
What's with that? So yeah. He's trying to kill this Steiner the whole time.
No, now he gets killing his... Steiner was only to get the medal.
And he has a chance to kill him now.
Yeah.
And now he decides, since you've given me a chance to earn my medal, I am now your friend. I'll go with you to earn your medal. I don't get it.
I don't think they were a friend.
Well,
no.
Still.
Maybe he realized that he needed to earn the medal.
No. If that's the case, it was far too quickly resolved, right? Jumping to that kind of a relationship. You can't jump to that relationship from the, I'm here to kill you and get revenge, and I've been trying to kill you the whole time to go, hey, I got a different idea. Instead of us killing each other, why don't you go with me and earn your medal? Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I'll follow you out to battle. What?
You can do that if you're 2 hours and 6 minutes into a film.
Yeah.
And you got to wrap it up. Money's running out.
No, but well, I don't think true. I don't think Steiner ever wanted to kill Stronsky.
No, I don't think so.
Well,
no, just Stronsky.
Well, yeah.
He killed that poor machine gunner guy.
But that was the
time. Oh, yeah, right.
That was the first time.
He knew he was out to get him.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So then they run out, and they start shooting, and then suddenly the Russian boy appears again, and then James Coburn starts laughing maniacally.
No,
Stronsky can't get his helmet on. I don't know. It was just very weird.
But
these
was,
last few.
So
seconds.
So even you were thinking
that was the end.
That was
very,
right
very
at the
end.
Yeah.
I think the sequence was. The boy appears, he's firing off screen. Stronsky, tries to pull his weapon up but knocks his helmet off, juggles it. The Russian boy shoots at Stronsky and the gun jams.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah, he couldn't get the shots off for some reason. And then James Coburn starts laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, it looked like a series of outtakes.
It looked like a series. It was disjointed. Mm-hmm. Again, this
film
is
very disjointed.
This film, as a director, is disjointed. Come on, you couldn't find a,
But then they came up with this powerful end credits,
which said,
"Well, the it was the music again, and then these very disturbing interspersed with these very disturbing pictures of war, not only World War II, but Vietnam and other modern conflicts."
Yeah.
Korea.
As soon as I saw it at Vietnamese ladies, I'm like, what's up with that?
Yeah.
This is a World War II movie. And then I realized, he's going global.
He heard that Orson Welles thought it was an anti-war movie, so he needed to put all that in.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Well, overall...
Oh, I love the film. It's fantastic.
Yeah. If you like a lot of shooting in slow motion... I didn't particularly think James Coburn did a great job.
Well, I think
really?
Mike
I
liked it.
No,
Mike.
I like James Coburn a lot.
Why, Mike?
It just
you back that up.
I, just classic James Coburn, tough guy, and he can survive all this. And now, and he's the only, he's the, not maybe they're not the only one, but he was acting nobly in his view of noble the whole time. So I thought it was great.
I tried it, and Jeff knows from my movie reviews in our other show, I tried to make a list of, like, you know, lighting effects, sound effects, how all this went down, and acting I put in there. And so I'm watching, trying to find a good actor, and the closest I came to it was James Coburn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, did you think anyone else was acting better than that? Or
I mean, I thought that James Mason did a fine job. And,
okay.
He was James Mason.
So, yeah.
So I wasn't impressed.
But, you know, I enjoy watching his eyebrows. He's got those very thick,
like mine,
eyebrows. I thought David Warner, I don't particularly love David Warner, but I thought he did an okay job.
He was
job
really
and,
good. In
yeah, the, yeah, I'll give him, he was second.
But James, and I'm a James Coburn fan. I loved him in Our Man Flint and In Like Flint
and the
Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
I just thought he was the coolest thing ever in The Magnificent Seven. But this one I didn't particularly like. Anybody, any acting stand out for you, Rich?
Well, I agree with what you guys said. I like the lead was effective and needed to be, but I didn't think it. I don't know.
Is this your favorite film?
No.
Yeah.
It's not terrible,
yeah,
but.
I agree. It's not terrible.
But it's not a must see.
No, but when we have such other fare as the new Stalingrad, the Saving Private Ryan.
So you think the modern movies.
No, because I still like The
better.
Longest Day
yeah.
better than this. And I know you weren't a big fan of that, but we'll review that on this show too sometime.
But I did like the Eastern Front. You don't see it much.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Great.
It was different from that standpoint.
T-34s,
no
trenches.
Americans, you know.
Right.
Which is different from what you're used to seeing.
Yeah.
So.
But I think as a looking back, some movies for me hold up really well. I saw The Great Escape not too long ago. I think that movie holds up really well.
Yes, my son liked that one.
And I see this movie, and even though I've only seen it this one time, I just feel like it's dated.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up. And that's because of the directorship. That's because of the dialogue.
Yeah.
That's because of the disjointedness of the thing. And maybe it's the slow motion blood. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because who does...
Yeah,
well,
it doesn't feel modern at all.
No, but they did slow motion in Saving Private Ryan on the beach scenes.
Yeah. Yeah,
but there was better sound to really make
it.
It
was a different effect.
Yeah. I was struck by your comment that there was actually two different directors at different points.
No,
in
I was
time.
Joking.
Oh, I thought you were serious.
No, that was a Salvador Dali surrealism joke.
Sorry, I thought you meant that because that
really
messed things
up. Yeah, but see, you'd believe it because it was just not smooth directing.
Apparently, Sam Peckinpah drank a bottle or two of whiskey every day that they were filming this.
You read that somewhere?
I did read that somewhere.
I did a little reading after I'd done the review and watched it, and it said like it was over budget. And they said he was too focused on the violence to keep his story at the forefront.
Yeah.
Which needed to happen. That's why I think why Jeff says at 2 hours and 6 minutes in, you better jump to this resolution pretty quickly.
Better wrap it up, guys. We're out of money. We can't pay you anymore.
Yeah.
And they weren't doing the three-hour films in those days.
Yeah. Right. So, there we go. Cross of Iron. Take it or leave it.
Cross of Iron, folks.
I'll leave it.
Watch it for, I would think, watch it maybe once to say you have?
Yeah.
Is that a way to rate it?
I would listen to this podcast and watch it and laugh, and then you'll get some better value out of it. But I wouldn't buy it. We bought it for $22.
No. Get it from the library.
Yeah. Get it from the library. We will sell this particular version.
And Jeff particularly liked the illustration on the cover of this version of the DVD.
Well, that's the movie poster.
A German soldier in the snow.
And there was no snow.
And there was no German soldier ever reaching for the Iron Cross like this. Now that would have maybe made a better ending. right?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
Good thought.
Stransky. Yeah.
Stransky.
He gets shot by the Russian boy. He's just going to get one illegally because he's going to steal it from a dead German or something. And then he gets shot by the Russian boy as he's stretching out for the thing.
You are a director at
Iron
heart.
Iron Cross. Oh, I am. I am a director at heart. I'm a lousy director at heart, but I'm a director. And, yeah, he's reaching for it, right? And then Coburn can start laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's like, he died for his... Or do a Gollum thing with the ring. He falls into the volcano with the ring. It's mine. And then he falls, like, into the...
Oh, yeah, that'd be perfect.
That's perfect.
That's one thing they left out was a big cavern with magma.
Volcano lava. For them to fight their way through on the way out. Yeah.
It's probably in the director's cut.
Wow. Well, thanks, everybody. This is the most fun time.
See you next time, everybody. See you at the movies.
Bye-bye.
Can we say that, or is that patented?
That's patented.
Okay.
Hans und Klein ging allein in die Wald.